Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
If episode 100 was our ultimate pod, then my word, this will be its Orwellian counterpart as we take inspiration from that most disturbing of George's novels to consign the worst tech ever to Room 101. In the second part of our Centurion series, I am joined by Scott Carey, David Price, and Tamlin McGee to engage in 40 minutes of newspeak, sending, as we will, our most hated tech into the dystopian dustbin. War is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, and this is the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, episode 101. Let's tear tech a new one. All right, so we've picked two things each that we hate about tech.
Just two.
Did you find that easy
enough? I hate all tech.
I mean, yeah, we do hate all tech, but we have to love it.
Two things we like about tech.
That'll be harder, probably. Yeah. So let's start off with Scott Carey. What is the first thing you would like to consign to the digital dustbin?
The Apple Watch. Oh, come on, Scott. You
contentious.
Knew this was coming.
So, why don't you tell us why, and then Mr. Price can rebuttal you.
It's fucking terrible. It's just, I hate them so much. It just, you don't need another screen in your life on your watch. We're addicted to screens anyway, and just to get notifications all the time on your watch and having no way to get away from it just infuriates me. The amount of times when you're just in the pub or just talking to someone and they just glance down at their watch like you did a minute ago when there was a wicket in the cricket is just, it's too much. It's complete overkill. And they look ridiculous. They are so horrible to look at. Not even just the Apple one, but all of them. Fitbit there. Yeah, nice.
What watch have you got, Scott?
Huh?
What watch have you got?
I have just a Skagen.
So you do have a watch?
Yes, I have a watch.
That's what Apple did though, isn't it? So they went to a market that was already overly wanky and pretentious and made it even worse.
Yes.
With screens.
Yeah.
What I would argue, there's a number of things there, but what I would argue is you actually look at screens less with an Apple Watch because...
You look at bigger screens less.
Well, I suppose so, but it's not really like a screen, is it? It's just like a little notification. It's like getting a pager instead of a phone. Because you know, when that wicket fell, I'm such an obsessive, I would have got a notification on my phone and I would have taken out my phone and looked at the score. And I used to go to barbecues and stand there all day with my phone out following the cricket score. And people hated me, obviously, because that's a terrible thing to do. But now I just get the update every now and then on my watch.
You just subtly look down at your wrist.
I know. Well, I just, it goes ding, and I look and I go, hey, KL Raoul is out. And that's
and everyone
that's
at the
also
barbecue
annoying.
Thinks you want to leave because you keep checking the time.
I mean, it's not great, obviously, and we are in a digitally enslaved world, but I think it's actually, if anything, slightly freed compared to phones and tablets and laptops.
So, Scott, you object to the notification side of wearables. Do you object to the health tracking side of it?
I object to the notification addiction they create and how fucking nerdy they look. But
nerdy, it's class.
Can't you just do health tracking on your device? So I track steps and stuff on my device.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but the Apple Watch will constantly monitor your heart rate.
Yeah.
And also when you go on a run, it will just automatically track what you've done. A phone can't necessarily do that.
My argument would just be get a fitness tracker rather than a stupid watch.
So you want to get another screen?
So you think a normal little...
And just wear it when you are exercising, yeah.
So you're okay with GPS watches, Garmins and stuff, that will track your run?
Don't wear it all the time. Just like, just you don't need it. It needs to go in the bin. Like, it's completely unnecessary. Another piece of tech.
You are allowed to put it in the bins. Tamlin, have you ever worn a smart watch?
No.
Would you? Do you hate them as much as Scott?
Well, you know what? I don't actively hate them. I just never would personally get one. I understand their sort of functionality, especially with fitness. It kind of makes sense to me. I do think they look pretty ugly, though. Even the sleekest ones that cost a bunch and aren't, you know, the Apple Watch or whatever. But actually, from watchmakers, I think they're still sort of overly clunky because they need so much space for all the stuff. It's just a one chunky boy on your wrist, isn't it?
Yeah.
The odd thing is that I've never actually liked watches as a thing. I've always like found them. Like, I mean, that generally that could be it because I didn't have any sort of aesthetic baggage. I think watches generally are like classic conspicuous consumption of wealth, aren't they? They're like, you know, these big fucking gold.
Yeah, for some, but some people just want to look at the time.
Yeah, but they very rare. I mean,
Scott doesn't look like Puff Daddy, does he?
I used to wear a Casio digital watch, which cost £7 from Argos.
Classic watches.
Because I just wanted to, I mean, they are, but I just wanted to look at the time. But I think so many watches are just, they're like the sort of thing that wankers wear.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say wankers?
I don't know.
That's twice. I've said it now.
So by that logic, do you think David is a wanker, Scott?
What if it's wanky to wear? I don't think Casio, I think Casios are great.
I mean, because he wears an Apple Watch.
Because, yeah, oh yeah, no, that's no, there's no secret there.
I think that's a fair comment.
Question I have quickly before we move on to the next topic. David, do you turn off certain notifications for your watch? Because the Apple Watch doesn't have to be a mirror of what the notifications you get on your phone. You can, like, sort of granularly control what goes to your watch. Or do you just let everything that you get on your phone also come to the watch?
I have less notifications come to my watch.
Okay. I genuinely can't think of a single notification that I would want to ping to my watch that would be so important that I won't look when I just next look at my phone, which is probably every 3 minutes.
I have a question. Do you have to charge it? Is it another thing you have to charge?
Yeah.
No, it's magically powered by...
No, but I was wondering if it was batteries or something you have to... In any case, it's just another... Okay. It's just another thing to worry about, isn't it?
Are you now going to put me in the top?
Yes, well, you're already there, David.
It is another thing to worry about.
You have to charge it every night, right?
This was a big thing. Well, the Apple Watch Series 2, what I loved so much about it was a two-day battery life, but that's still appalling compared to the classic Casio that I used to wear, which you never had to charge.
So you put your phone on charge and your watch on charge.
Yeah.
It's smart hats.
I mean, it is. I completely agree.
Well, no, genuinely, next will be glasses. It will be smart glasses. It will be
your
Google
glasses.
Yeah, you will.
You'll have to see.
Otherwise, you can't see like the Terminator. You can probably just see.
So, Scott.
Well, unless you're me, I mean, I do actually need glasses. So, if they were my glasses and they were smart glasses, I would need them.
I could move to a pay-per-C model whereby they only activate once you've charged them. And
what, like,
there's been a microtransaction through PayPal or something.
Go take them to the off license. Yeah. Can you put 50p on the glasses?
That's real late capitalism, that.
Give it a year or two, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, Scott, you're allowed to bin it. Tamlin, would you bin it?
No. I'm just so ambivalent to it. I just never even consider them.
It's totally indifferent.
Well,
I am.
I'm wearing a Fitbit, so I can't. But Scott, you have binned Apple Watches.
Can I make one final?
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
of it.
I mean, yeah, time constraints.
My Apple Watch has made me fitter because unlike a Fitbit, or whatever that you put on when you do a workout, and I just wouldn't do a workout.
David is addicted to closing his rings, which is on the Apple Watch. They design three circles basically, which you can used to measure what three things?
It's the amount you stand up, the amount that you do strenuous exercise, and the amount that you do any exercise.
So like active.
Yeah.
And if you close all three, you get like a streak, and then it rewards you with little badges.
You know what? See, like, that would introduce so much more anxiety to my life. As someone who like constantly obsesses about all these things anyway, having like a quota to fill every day and extra things to worry about.
I agree with that.
As well as remembering to charge it would like really stress me out.
But I count it as a good anxiety because it makes me do good things.
And it's £300.
Didn't the steps thing just get like basically debunked as well?
All systems are sort of rough approximations of our steps. If David was to wear like this Fitbit all day as well, they would have two different numbers.
And didn't also like some health organisation come out and say that 10,000 steps is just completely pointless?
Yeah, it's like one of your five a day that was made up.
Yeah.
By the Vegetable Council of Great Britain. I made that up as well. Okay. It was something like that, you know.
I think that's not far off.
Yeah.
Anyway, we must move on to Tamlin McGee's first topic of a certain tech entrepreneur who would like to flush.
Guess who?
Not only would I like to flush Elon Musk, I'd like to put him in a car and send him to Mars in it.
One of his own cars,
one of his own cars, preferably. Just as far away from the planet as possible.
Please tell us why.
I mean, there are so many reasons that my mind's almost going blank, so maybe just the most recent one.
Is the main reason because he stole your girlfriend to be?
Oh, Grimes. Scott. I guess the most recent one was his Joe Rogan podcast appearance where he like smoked weed on it and just demonstrated the ability of the wealthy white American male to get away with smoking weed without repercussion, whereas one of his employees was punished for failing a drug test at Tesla, which is just the most recent issue I have with him.
That's astonishing. I hadn't heard that second part.
Yep.
That's terrible.
He is genuinely, I think, in the midst of quite a serious breakdown at this point.
Well, he's not doing himself any favours, is he?
He's just lost it. He's just lost the plot.
I also started listening to that podcast and I just got bored.
I couldn't imagine anything worse.
Have you listened to it?
No.
I mean, I don't really know who Joe Rogan is. I got like halfway through and he's like, it's so boring.
Muscle-bound, he's a jock, DMT man.
He's a jock comedian, which is a bad combination.
Of all the people as well, I saw a tweet from Jack being like, look beyond the headlines and listen to the whole podcast. It's so visionary, and it's like, oh, you're part of this whole annoying group of tech bros that just all need to go in the bin.
Yeah. Yeah, they just start talking about, basically Rogan just asks him, oh, I don't understand how you have so much, you do all this stuff, where do you find the time? And
it, ambient.
Oddly, in fairness to Elon Musk, he's kind of like, just trying to find different ways not to say I employ thousands of people.
I'm very, very rich.
Incredibly rich, which tends to help. But that's not to defend him. He doesn't come across well at all.
I think just something that really winds me up about him is, like, aside from his sort of like narcissistic fits of rage at the mildest criticism and comparing genuine heroes to paedophiles for helping in national emergencies, just the completely infantile way he conducts himself on Twitter and with his new business ventures as well. It's like a privileged teenager has been given $20 million to play around with, and just no one's saying this is a bad idea, and he gets to keep replicating it.
You know? Yeah, there's so many things at the moment that sites are profiting off, just like, you know, doing weekly roundups of what he's done because there's so much stuff to do.
Yeah,
this podcast kind of does end up doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he like fired someone, like a manager on one of his factory floors the other day because he was walking around and he kind of walks, Musk himself like walked in the way of, and a safety precaution, the factory line of Tesla shuts down. Yeah. And he was like, why is this shut down? And they're like, well, it's a safety measure because you're walking in the way of it. And he like fired the guy because it had stopped.
He doesn't like safety measures. He's been union busting and stopping workers been getting mangled in his machines.
It's so weird.
Getting any compensation.
Oh, God.
Why is it that he's sort of risen to this level of wacky and world-renowned? Because, I mean, he's been around for a while before he got his hair transplant. You can see him, pictures of him and Peter Thiel, because they founded PayPal, right?
I think there is something really literary and interesting about it, just from a narrative point of view, because he's positioned himself as this sort of amazing inventor who's going to come along and save the world from all these issues and get rid of cars with fossil fuels and so on and so on. And he's just repeatedly being terrible.
Yeah, like, I think the way I've always thought of Musk, well, definitely late stage Musk, is he's basically as close as
we've period Musk.
I prefer his early work.
He's as close as we've got to like a Bond villain in the way that he's this kind of visionary.
That's not a good thing, though, is it?
No, like, it's definitely not a good thing. But that's why he gets
he's
the press.
Thomas Edison, but he's actually Hank Scorpio or whatever.
Basically, yeah. He's awful. That's why he gets the press, because he's a very good self-promotionist. He's got loads of money, so he can just like basically go on any platform he likes. And he just like, he's got this weird band of merry men that kind of follow him around on Twitter and like back him. Yeah. Whenever he says anything.
You remember when he did the apology to the Unsworth, is called, the British diver that he called a pedo. Mm. And he did that awful. And he did that appalling non-apology where he sort of prefaced it with a whole load of stuff. Well, our life's provoked and he is suspicious and he did all this stuff. But I'm going to be the bigger man and say sorry. And then all of the idiots just piled in. They were all like, oh, this is, you're the bigger man, and he is a pedo, by the way. And just making it so much worse, because this is what shields him from consequences and having to learn, because he's got this group around him.
And he's also constantly dog whistling to the alt-right as well on Twitter. You can see it in his mentions. He never says anything to sort of dissuade people from, you know, with like white nationalist Twitter accounts replying with Hitler memes or whatever. And it's like, come on, surely that should be damaging to your brand, not helping.
Well, he's pals with Peter Thiel and Jack, isn't he? So there's a thread there.
The trifecta of shit.
Yeah. White libertarians.
That does actually lead us on to our next topic, unless you'd like to rag on him anymore.
We could just be here all day.
You really could. Like... What do you think he's going to do next? That's my question. Not necessarily of his business ventures, but I mean, he's already done quite a lot of deplorable things.
Well, he came out and said that he wants to do more like brain AI, like interfaces. And this is a guy that actually was quite good at kind of like bringing to attention the negative side of AI and that there should be like an ethical framework in place. And then he went on Joe Rogan the other week and someone said, and Joe Rogan was like, why are you now talking about building your own AI interface? And he was like, well, I've spent so long trying to fight it, now I might as well join them. It's like, what are you doing?
But he's probably going to buy a child from some impoverished group. And
in that same podcast, he where they're talking about that, he put to Rogan that he wouldn't like count out the possibility that our world is a simulation.
Mm.
And he goes down that route as well.
Yeah,
the worst possible kind. Cause
he just had a bomb hit, so of course he did.
Elon Musk, yeah.
I think he's going to run for president.
Ugh.
I think he's actually more likely than Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Because he has even more of a messiah complex and is even more of a terrible person.
Yeah, Zuckerberg, there's a lot of Trump Musk, similarities there.
Oh, that would be the ticket, wouldn't it? Zuckerberg, but neither of them would want to be vice president.
Yeah. No.
I thought, you know, head-to-head even.
Oh, beautiful. If they could somehow both lose.
I could see Musk being on the Republican ticket quite easily.
Yeah.
Zuck on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
And the worst year of our lives. Well, it was all
got worse.
All
yeah.
transpired, yeah.
Well, all the people you've been talking about, well flushed.
We'll put that in the bin in a couple of years.
We'll bin,
and then all will be solved.
Yeah, we'll bin that presidential race.
Space bin.
Space bin 2020.
I do like the image of just putting him in a bin.
I
want to
play that game.
Just putting him in a bin, putting him in a car, and just sending him into space is a really satisfying image.
Like a more advanced version of rolling him down a hill.
Yeah.
The opposite.
Was that the other alternative?
Yeah, see, the down
it's
a hill.
Either one
of
those.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
And into space with him.
So
off you go.
my first thing that I would bin, which you've already mentioned a fair few times, is I would bin Twitter.
Would you, though?
Yeah. Yeah, if I could. I mean, I can't.
How many followers have you got, Henry?
Not as many as I'd... I don't know. I actually don't know.
Sorry, that's a very...
Under 1,000? Yeah. Probably under 500. Like, I don't... I'm a bit of a lurker.
Would you put it in the bin if you were verified?
I would love to be verified. Yeah, that'd be the... I mean, I hate Twitter, but I would love to be verified.
So the problem I got with Twitter is that it's just... It presents you with the opinions of people who shouldn't be emboldened. And also, it's kind of, but at the same time, it's an echo chamber. So we all use Twitter and we think, or perhaps are sometimes led to believe that it's the opinions of like a lot of people. And it is apparently 330 million active users. But that's
good
still, numbers, isn't it? That is a good number, but it's not completely representative of everyone. And the fact that we're only viewing things and accounts from probably things that we're politically in agreement with.
Yes, yeah, so you only ever see a specific little bubble of that 330.
Yeah, and then we see something we disagree with, which most people disagree with because I think we're normal people.
Yeah.
But it's like a shaft of light comes in from like the far right and then everyone shoots it down and everyone gives themselves a pat on the back and shouts the Nazi down or whatever.
And but then I don't Trump's think that's, the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that goes the other way. I mean, I think one of the worst aspects of Twitter is like when basically people like the alt-right dig up like the old tweets of someone to like out of context and just completely shame them, and it happens both ways, and it's just a horrible way to live online.
Like, even at its core, I still find the idea of it odd, the microblogging idea,
shouting
if that's what
into
we're calling
it,
just like that's a couple of sentences that just exist forever on the internet.
Alternative viewpoint. I'll try and make it quick.
Yeah, no,
that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
A friend of mine was talking about people with attention problems and other people with issues like that, neurodivergent people, and said that for him and some other people who have experiences similar to him, it's the perfect platform because they struggle to read through long books on theory or history, and yet some people will boil down the essence of an argument or something into tweets, and that's actually a way to involve these people in the political discourse, I guess, that they otherwise wouldn't have the energy or attention span to do.
Well, that's cool, and I'm sure there are people who end up using Twitter for constructive things like that. It's just my feeling that in the way that it exists and it's easiest for it to be used, it's not doing that.
Is it the way it amplifies certain voices? That
yeah, like for Donald Trump, he's like completely unpoliced on this platform where there is no like common law. He doesn't have to adhere to any kind of decency. I know he's the president, so he can't really be banned.
But well, also, they were like banned before he became president.
Why can't you ban the president anyway?
Because there's one person called Jack Dorsey who just sort of from week to week will decide that there's this new rule because the zeitgeist, which is probably again in his own little echo chamber, thinks is basically what he sees on Twitter, mm-hmm. deems that this week we should probably ban Alex Jones, but we can't ban the president.
That's the weird thing though, isn't it? It is just a private company run by this one dickhead.
Yeah.
And like we could all just leave if we hate it so much. We could all leave and not use it anymore, but we're kind of addicted to it. And it's always been a cliche that journalists in particular love Twitter, but like we all pretend we hate it, but we actually all use it all the time and love it, apart from Tamlin.
I don't love it, I hate it, but
I'm
addicted to it.
We're on it all day, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. I have, hard not to look.
Yeah, I have Tweetbot open all the time.
Yeah.
The thing is that it's not just that it allows everybody to talk, which would sort of be okay, but it actively rewards people for being outrageous and
because the kind of dopamine hit that people get from things like Instagram when they're like, oh yeah, no filter or whatever, but they've obviously just posed and they want you to go, oh, you look great or whatever. Celebrities and regular people alike, but it's all rewarded in a more positive way, right? Like, oh, you look good, so I'm gonna like this. Whereas like you say, on Twitter somebody can say like a really quite deplorable thing, but the reaction they get will be like tons of mentions and likes and retweets and a huge conversation happening around them that makes them feel really important.
Yeah, and Donald Trump is the exemplar.
I'm sure that some people who weren't quite sure of their morally abject views are now like emboldened when they get that kind of immediate engagement.
Yeah. Even when they're getting just massively dunked on by everyone, they're still like getting numbers.
Exactly. The people down the pub, they'll say it, and a couple of other guys will just go, yeah, I agree, yeah, you're right. But now they can do it, and with the right like incision into a certain sort of social sphere, they'll think thousands of people agree with them.
Well, look at that Prison Planet guy. I mean, he was nothing, was he, before Twitter, and now he's like got this little following and he can just do it all from his bedroom. Imagine my shock he doesn't leave his house, does he? And he's in front of that stupid map.
Yeah.
I just think we'd all be happier if it didn't exist.
I would be much happier if I never knew who that person was.
I would bin it. You wouldn't bin it?
I couldn't. I just couldn't. What does it
bring to your life that you would lose?
I honestly really like it as a platform. Like I use it as a place to find stuff to read and what's going on in the news and what ridiculous stuff Trump's done the night before. And it's the first thing I open in the morning, and I probably spend about 15 minutes there, just like, and then there'll be something that annoys me and then I'll close it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I actually quite like it. There is like a hate like thing, isn't there, that you were hinting at, David, but like, That's same with the newspaper, isn't it? You'd read the newspaper and everything would piss you off, but you'd still read it every day.
It's not quite the same process somehow.
That's editorial. This is just...
Yeah, but you can kind of self-editorialise, but I guess the problem you have is when people just get pushed to the top of your feed, even though they're idiots and you don't follow them.
I just strongly believe that people are idiots and pricks and they shouldn't be allowed to have a platform.
Why should we have a platform?
Nobody should.
Not necessarily. I'm not necessarily. Yeah, I agree.
I think literacy
was
a mistake.
Twitter.
Very platonic.
I preferred it when it was just cathedrals with things carved on it, and then that's where you got all your information.
Shrines to various demigods.
Wait. Are you putting the printing press in the bin?
Before that, actual language.
No, you can't have another topic. We will move on, though. Okay, I would bin Twitter. Perhaps you guys wouldn't. But what David would ban is a certain thing to do with Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, not just Twitter, all social media. Although these days, I try and avoid all of the other ones.
Are you binning all social media?
No.
No, all brands on social media.
Use the example that you got annoyed at
Yeah, so you posted something on Slack, was it yesterday? It was Denny's.
Yeah.
They're all these American brands that I don't know about, and I think they're like a cafe, are they, or something?
It's, well. it's a breakfast cafe place.
Yeah.
So they posted...
Delicious, by the way.
It's good.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. For some, I'm happy for them to deliver me eggs and fries or whatever they are eating in America. But what I don't like is for them to be posting these hilarious, savage photos, memes, I'm sorry they call them. With like weird sort of anti-humor, which, you know, I like when it comes from just people who I'm friends with. But it's like it's a million-dollar corporation going, oh,
let me just tell the listener what it was. So it just made me giggle. And again, I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite because I posted it from Twitter. Yeah. But it was a picture of like a dollop of cream and syrup on the top of some pancakes. And it had been typed above the tweet, zoom in on the syrup. And when you zoomed in, there was a tiny bit of thing which says, look in the left corner. And then you go to that corner, it says, look in the top right corner. And it bounces you around all the corners. And then when you get to the last one, it says, look in the cream. And you zoom into the cream in the picture, and it says, did this distract you from all the existential dread, lol? And it made me laugh, and you really didn't like it.
But they obviously just employ some millennial intern to do their social media.
Yeah.
Why do brands do that?
Because it increases their revenue by 6% per annum, because some social group focus group has told them. And it's terrible, and it drains all the fun out of it, because there's lots of different kinds of humor, right? And you've got your humor, which is like Bob Monkhouse, where it's like punchline. No, but it's like, you know, that's how old it is before you get that sort of stuff. But these days, humor is usually about saying outrageous things and being edgy, and I like that. When there's something at stake, but when it's a corporation and they've carefully trimmed off the edges of it, and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to put in a reference to existential dread, even though that has nothing to do with what we do as a company.
I don't know, pancakes are pretty good at taking the edge off.
Yeah.
It does serve a social purpose in that it indicates the end of every meme cycle, and it's time we collectively understand to move on from that meme instead now. So thank you, brands, for that.
But that is.
It's when the one that really annoys me is when the two brands like get into like an argument or
or a loving.
Oh, like that is just so brazen and annoying.
So wait, David, are you suggesting that brands should not even be on social media? How else should they conduct themselves? Because it's pretty like airheaded for like, you know, M&S just to be like, now we sell this kind of bread.
That is exactly what I want from them.
Yeah.
That would be my perfect tweet. I would love that.
That's your entire tweet.
And then
again,
I would go, like,
retweet, so Denny should just be like, reply. We still sell the same stuff we sold last week.
We are continuing to sell brown sauce. And it would just be that. In preparation for this, I looked up some articles about the most savage comebacks by brands on social media.
I think these are worse. Appalling. I think these need to go in the bin more than the brands.
What do you mean by savage comebacks?
Right, let me give you some examples, right? So there is, and again, it's American. I have no idea what they're talking about. But there is a thing called Hamburger Helper, right? Anyone know what that is?
No.
It's like some sort of minced beef thing that you use to like make hamburgers out of it or something. No, yeah, it doesn't pop up and go, I see you're making hamburgers. It's like some fast food preparation home thing.
Okay.
And some guy who they call a sexist dude, and undoubtedly he is, but humorously, he tweeted, knowing how to mix Hamburger Helper doesn't make you wife material. And he had a photo of some like badly cooked burger or whatever that his wife had made. And then Hamburger Helper replied, and this makes you husband material. And it's like, well, and two separate,
okay, yeah, that's quite lame.
Two separate articles listed this in the best ever savage comebacks from social media brands. That is terrible. But here's one that's worse, right? This is how badly they trample on things. Do you know who Rob Delaney is?
Yeah.
The comedian. He's very funny.
He's very funny.
So he posted, and he was supposedly tweeting this at Charmin, you know, make toilet paper.
Oh, yeah.
And their adverts are like bears with toilet paper. Exactly. And they're like doing poos in the wood and stuff. And he tweeted at them, my daughter was killed by a bear yesterday when she tried to offer it toilet paper, you son of a bitch. And for the sake of the joke, he'd put at Charmin at the beginning, you know.
Oh, I rate that.
And then Charmin obviously replied.
Saying.
And they said, oh, Charmin bears are animated. We do not advise offering real bears toilet paper. Leave the wild animal wrangling to at Old Spice. And like, God,
okay, that's lame.
I hate you.
I do like, on the flip side, the fact that there are these poor sort of people who have to manage these accounts and just deal with people who are sad like me who occasionally derive pleasure from trolling them. Like the other guy, the other day, I saw some guy. He posted on Pepto Bismol's Facebook wall. My wife drank some of this product and something bad happened. And Pepto Bismol said, "We're sorry to hear that, Rhett. Please send us a PM and tell us what went wrong. Thanks." And he said, "It took away her diarrhea. She loved having diarrhea." And I just love that that's a thing you can do. Like,
yeah.
That is excellent.
I do think the clickbaity, these are the most savage comebacks on social media, are literally the worst form of content ever to grace the internet.
What about, you know, like when a kid, like, she thought the tiger bread looked more like a giraffe, so Sainsbury's changed it to giraffe bread for her. That was quite nice.
Was that orchestrated by Sainsbury's, though? What do you reckon?
By social media, yeah.
Was she a plant?
Was she...
I don't think you have to even be that cynical, because there is clearly going to be some real people that spend all day going, "Oh, I didn't enjoy my experience in your shop today. Yeah. Hopefully you'll give me some free tickets." Because I've unfollowed people because they use Twitter as like a complaints desk.
Actually, I've got a friend. Yeah. I got a friend who does.
They're worse.
I got a friend who does this all the time, and we always take the piss out of him.
I just unfollow people.
Like we didn't pay to get the same like seats next to each other on the same Ryanair flight. And then, like, he was furious because we all got on the plane and we were all in, like, 1B, 2B, 3B, 4B with, like, seats next to us. And he was livid. He was, like, tweeting Ryanair on the runway. Being like, "This is an outrage." And we were like, "Oh, Will, it's fine. It's, like, an hour."
But then what would have been the best thing? For them to reply and say... Well, for them to ignore
Shut
him...
Shut the fuck up, Will.
Probably the best. Or them, yeah, and them to reply and be savage.
Yeah, but they don't. Most companies don't do that. They go, "Oh, sorry to see... Oh, but you have to pay extra to book," which is what he knew anyway.
See, I think that's
just a waste of time,
just
isn't
to tell
it?
Him.
I do feel bad for some of the teams who work at like places like, I don't know, any of the train companies in the UK,
yeah,
who just
absolutely
must be getting abuse all day because through no fault of their own, the company they work for is just absolutely dire, and they just have to, you know,
that's true,
absorb
that's
all
true
this crap from.
In
us.
Fact, that after our break can. Go nicely into Tamlin's second topic, but that we've gone on for far too long, so the second half will have to be zippier. A quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're back. It's round two. Room 101 has already got the Apple Watch, Elon Musk, Twitter, and Denny's and all those other bastards in there.
They're in
the bin. Thanks, David. No waffles for you. Tamlin, what is your second binnable offence?
It's Amazon.
Big one.
Yeah. So,
going to need a bigger bin.
You really are.
Going to need one of Elon Musk's crazy space bins. But
So it's Amazon as a company, not like Jeff Bezos as a person.
Well, he can go in
can
with
go
the company
in with it,
as well.
Yeah.
Well, not all of the company, because
not
I feel,
any of its workers.
I feel so bad for all of the workers who are. Do you see the other day Amazon had patented a cage for its workers to stand in that would like move them around. There'd be a robotic thing underneath and they'd be in a cage like fulfilling quotas, unable to interact or go to the toilets or anything.
What, so like takes them to different parts of the warehouse and have to put their hands through the bars?
And Amazon responded to this by saying, oh, we've got no plans to introduce this. And it's like, that's a really low bar that we're genuinely wondering if Amazon's going to start caging people. And they said, oh no, we've got no plans at present. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, we're just filing for a patent in case we want to cage people.
Exactly. And like, I see that Amazon is like really useful, like it's objectively a good service, but that comes at a cost. And the fact that it's a $1 trillion company, which happened fairly recently, I think, last week or the week before, like I've seen memes that go around saying, you know, Amazon is a $1 trillion company and yet its workers are, you know, living in car parks. But I saw another one that said Amazon is a $1 trillion company because its workers are living in car parks. So this obscene wealth that's accumulated into like Jeff Bezos's hands and Amazon's hands, to that's kind of an accident of monopoly, really. It could have been anyone, but it happened to be Amazon. Comes at the expense of all these people suffering terrible conditions.
And also bookshops and latterly all other shops in this country, for example, that pay their taxes.
Yeah, like let's see how it goes, because I think we had a chat recently, Scott, about Amazon's presence in the US. Was it 1 in 2 purchases are Amazon?
Yeah, it's mad. Yeah.
So what next? It's not unfeasible to think that they will completely dominate the consumer space.
No, and you know, we need to feel very, very sorry for Walmart and Target at this point, because it's really ripped their heart out.
There will only be one company eventually, won't there? It'll be like in Demolition Man, where all the restaurants consolidate as Taco Bell.
There will good only reference.
It will only be Amazon.
Surely, with savage Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
Surely at some point they would just be broken up. They'll just be anti-competitive.
They're going to be more powerful than governments.
Your faith
arguably they're more powerful than governments now.
Your faith in regulators, Scott, is wholesome.
Thanks.
Naive, I think. Sorry. I think that time's long past. They've completely, they're basically a monopoly in the consumer goods space, aren't they?
Yeah, and I know you were saying the other day on this podcast about how terrifying it is that they're now in like business procurement and public procurement, and that's only going to be another sort of string to their bow, and they're just going to be basically everywhere, and anytime you buy anything in any domain, it's going to be through Amazon.
I think Google and Facebook rightly get a lot of flack for being evil, faceless mega corporations, a part of a horrible dystopian world that we live in, but I think Amazon doesn't get enough flack. I mean, it's a $1 trillion company that abuses its workers objectively, and is integrating itself with the American police state and the CIA
and
the Pentagon. Like, what more could you want for a dystopian picture of corporatocracy, do you know what I mean? Amazon at the front of the queue, if you ask me.
I was reading about the 19th century last night, and like the East India Company and the Manhattan Company and things like that, and I'm wondering when Amazon is going to be a parallel to that and have its own A, country, and B, army, because it only seems like a matter of time to me.
Bezos is swole now as well, so he could definitely
he personally
he
is
could have an army.
He does rock that gilet. I mean, we all use Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Bought some books the other day.
Feel bad about it?
Yeah, I bought a book the other day.
You can use Abe books. They're also very cheap, and the delivery's a little bit longer, but it's cheap, about as cheap as Amazon. I've been looking at alternatives, but probably those will also dwindle in time as well, because Amazon is able to undercut everyone so much.
Yeah. I do like going to bookshops, though.
Yeah.
So,
that won't last. There's also that. Although, is it Foyles just got bought by, what's the bigger one, Waterstone?
Did it? Really?
Yeah. Which could, well, it could be good for Foyles, actually.
Yeah, I do like that Foyles.
Because the people that run, if it is Waterstones, I think it's Waterstones, have historically been quite respectful to indie companies, and hopefully will run it well and give it more power.
I actually do only use Amazon to buy books, now I think about it.
Yeah, books, look it up, it's good.
Yeah. I only know about them through Amazon.
Actually, really? Talon, didn't you use Amazon to get a PlayStation 4 delivered to here in under 2 hours?
Yes, I did. I thought it was a marvel of technology. It was
So the services that it provides, like you say, you're not against them. It's the...
Well, I kind of am, actually, hypocritically, because there's this sort of invisible thing you don't see. Like, it was amazing that it got to me in under 2 hours, but the quotas that must be in place at these fulfillment centres, they call the warehouses, and then the drivers as well, who aren't necessarily... who are contracted through Amazon, like, are having a terrible time as well. So I feel like a bastard for having ever used it.
Part of me, puritanically, also feels like we should suffer in order to have things. Like, at the very least, we should have to walk to a shop or wait a day. They seem like the absolute baseline of what should be required to get a sophisticated gaming system. But no, 2 hours to your desk
in 2 hours.
Would you
enjoy your game more if you'd had to walk somewhere for it?
I actually think genuinely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that stems back to...
This coming from a man who wanted to take his Xbox to Las Vegas because he thought there'd be nothing to do.
You've been telling that anecdote for a long time.
And we move on, thank you for binning Amazon, Tamla McGee, to a similar vein of your next topic.
Oh, it was a clever segue. Well done, Henry. Yeah, I sort of generally don't like free things, but specifically, I don't.
You don't like free or fun.
I don't like free fun. That's the worst combination. I don't like free games. And I think...
Freemium, like, apps.
Yeah, so as
well,
games go...
I guess you need to buy chalk.
On that front,
from Amazon.
You know, you remember Spin the Bottle from when you were a teenager. A company tried to make a paid for version of Spin the Bottle, where there was like a plastic bottle on a little battery powered. That's like, I hate that. But
it's probably an app for it. It's probably a freemium.
Almost certainly, actually. But I only really play iOS games and. And there's a lot of innovation in there, but it's been completely ruined by the existence of freemium.
Wait, so you play games that you like pay an upfront one-off cost for?
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes play freemium games to see if they're any good, and they are tempting because they are free, but they're always, or almost always, unutterable shit.
They are always bad.
But I mean, structurally, unutterably shit. They are motivated to be shit. It's in their... it's in their business model that they have to be shit, otherwise they won't make money, because they put up obstacles. So they'll say, "Oh, it's free to download, free to start playing." They'll be user friendly just long enough to get you invested in it emotionally or whatever, and then they'll start saying, "Right, for now, before you get your next car or your next goblin or whatever the hell, you have to wait 8 hours and you go, what? And that, but you can buy some gemstones in order to not have to wait the 8 hours. And it's all built around the most horrible psychological Skinner box type principles. And because these companies, you know, and you could say, well, I won't do that, but because free games exist, people don't buy games that cost £20, which, you know, when I was playing SNES games when I was a kid, you would pay £30. That would be a standard price for
a
SNES game.
PlayStation games,
and it's still standard for PlayStation, whatever.
More now.
PC games like £20, but in iOS or mobile games, the standard is now like £1.99 is genuinely considered premium, which is absolutely mad, and they cannot sustain themselves.
Remember when Kim Kardashian brought out an iOS game? I'm trying to remember what it was called, but it basically made I think it made $1 million in first week for her alone. And it was a freemium game because you would just pay for add-ons and extra dresses and stuff.
It's just the psychology of paying for apps is strange, isn't it? Because some people do. You buy games like you would have paid whatever it was when it launched, like $7.99 for Super Mario Run or something. But then the other day someone was asking me, oh, what's the best podcast app? Which is one of my mates. And I said, oh, it's called Pocket Cast. It's great. But I was like, oh, you have to. It's a one-off payment. It's like $2.99. And they're like, no, not doing that. But I was like, you just asked me what the best one was. It's £3. You just spent £6 on a pint. Like, and this will last forever as a one-off payment. And like, people, why is that, do you think? The psychology of not paying £3 for something that you genuinely use every day.
Because we've really got used to free apps.
Yeah.
Free services. Is this because people don't realise that, which has come to light in the past couple of years, that was at the massive expense of our data?
Yeah.
But I think there must be another reason as well. Like, I've read numerous studies that show that the biggest like pirates of content are also the biggest spenders of content.
Okay.
So people will pirate music or whatever, and then what they like, they'll go and buy the vinyl, which is like £20. So I'm not sure what the difference is between like the whole app economy and why people are refusing to pay for £2 stuff. Like, if you like it, maybe like trials is the way to go. I don't know.
I got massively addicted to a freemium game the other day.
Called what?
Golf Clash.
Oh, someone told me that was good.
It's like genuinely really, really good. Okay, and I was addicted to it for about a month.
All right, this can be our case study then. So how did it make money?
So it made money on, like, you could basically, if you won a match against, you played against a person online in like a very quick fire golf like hole, and then whoever wins gets the reward. And then to unlock that reward, you would have to wait 8 hours. But if you wanted to unlock it quicker, you would have to pay.
Can you pay with the rewards from the game, or do you actually
yes,
have to pay?
Yes, but then right. you can buy extra ones if you run out
right.
for real money.
Because, I mean, obviously...
Which I never did,
yeah.
but that's obviously how they make money. Because I had the patience just to leave it for a day or whatever. But I can see how they would make a lot of money. And the way that it was clever is it was a well-made, good game. And the good design of it was that it hooked you before you realised that you were going to spend any money. So they give you lots yeah. of coins to start with, and then you play your first few games and you win. It's really fun. And then you just want to keep playing, but then you realise that you quickly run out of coins, so then you want to pay for more. And that's how they get you. They hook you first, and then they bring the cost.
Do you remember arcades?
Like drugs. Are
you...
Yeah.
What, I mean, like drugs. Do you guys remember the arcades? Are you guys old enough to have yeah. gone down the arcade yeah, and put yeah. 10p's in? Those games are always designed, and we always remember those games as being amazing, but they weren't. They were awful. You go
I
in
don't
there.
Know. Time Crisis.
Time Crisis
was damn
is
good.
The one I was right, thinking
you're
of.
So,
yeah.
Oh, you're so young.
House of the Dead was
oh
evil.
My
though.
God.
Was
yeah. I know you're talking about like bloody Pong and Donkey Kong and stuff.
Yes, but yes, House of the Dead is a good example because it became impossible at a certain point, and it was actually. So in my university common room, there was House of the Dead, and next to it was a quiz game, which. At a certain point would just decide you were going to lose the money, and it would start doing questions like St. Pancras Station is 612 centimetres
yeah, like
taller
an
than
it,
some, you know, it would be something completely impossible to get, and they just decide you'd lose. But actually House of the Dead was almost the same, because at a certain point it was just impossible.
That's what hitboxes in pubs do, don't they? You play yeah. pointless and you get to the end, and then at the end the person will always get pointless, and it's like, oh great.
But I agree with you. I would bin freemium games. I hate the idea. Rather just pay for a game. It's weird that you would have to just keep paying for something forever. You could end up spending yeah. hundreds of pounds.
But also,
ethically,
you need
well.
To support mm. the people that made it. Otherwise, those people will not be able to support themselves, and they won't make any more. It's self-interest as well.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of the people that make games that I love no longer make games because they didn't make any money. It's like, try and think about the standard of the stuff that's been made. It's simple.
Would you both bin it as well?
Yeah, bin yeah. it.
Cool.
Absolutely.
The first unanimous binning.
That would have to include, was it called Golf Clash?
Yeah, no, I've already stopped playing it because it annoyed me so. Well, basically, I stopped winning. So.
Scott.
Yeah.
What's the second of your binnable offences?
This is where we're going to lose all our listeners, isn't it? Because I'm going to talk about something really, really boring IT.
That's good. That's why you want to bin it.
There's a lot of buzzwords in IT and big technology, but there's been one that has grown into ubiquity in the last year or so, and it's called digital transformation.
What is that?
That is the problem. It's nothing. Okay. It means nothing. It is used to describe everything. So
is this in conjunction with mobilizing the workforce?
Tech companies basically say, oh, we're going to help you with your digital transformation so that you can adapt to... digital, like being like, because Uber is going to come and eat your lunch, so you need to digitally transform, which means you need to spend billions of dollars with us to help you do that.
So what's an example of what they mean by that? Migrating systems, or like, can you even do it without speaking in corporate buzzwords?
There are real examples, but they're like not many of them. So someone like Walmart, who we mentioned earlier, has now basically built up a Amazon-ish website.
Okay.
Where you can get very quick access to their products. And that is a digital transformation for them. It's them moving away from their old world of big box stores to the new world of e-commerce.
Yep.
And they've had to spend millions doing that in terms of building up the infrastructure required. But the problem is now it's just used as an absolute catch-all for every single kind of tech project. And it means nothing. And I've even seen it on like billboards and like ads in like airports now, because it's just used everywhere. And it's just like a dog whistle for like people who have tech budgets to be like, you're going to fall behind if you don't get on board with this ridiculous thing that we've made up.
It's extortion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like your
digital extortion.
It is. Yeah. It's like if you don't know what digital transformation is, or what your digital transformation is, then you're going to fall behind and your company's going to fail and your kids are going to be hungry.
So it's like a wankier version of Evolve or Die.
Yeah. basically, it's like the modern version of that. And I'm guessing that technology marketing is always in some way lent on this kind of idea.
Spend money with us.
Yeah.
Is it more annoying because there is a kernel of truth to it, like the Walmart thing you just said, but it's just being abstracted into this like bloated nonsense.
Used by everyone. Absolutely everyone now mentions it in some way. Anytime I have a conversation with anyone or go to any conference, especially, that's the worst, is it just comes up over and over again.
Have you ever caught yourself saying it? Because I have once or twice.
I'm sure I've written it. I'm sure I've written it. And I will be discussing it with myself.
Do you think that a company could not do it, though?
Do you think 100%. You could just apply a little bit of imagination and, like, not call it digital transformation.
No, I didn't mean not use the phrase. I meant for a company, in the broadest sense, to not transform digitally.
So I want to bin the buzzword.
But not the concept.
Not the concept.
But is the concept one of, like, complete overhaul? Or is it, like, just change that?
You can do both. You can definitely do both.
Okay, that's annoying.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It means everything. It's so ambiguous. At once.
Exactly. Right. If you're Ford, you don't have to overnight bin your entire car making organization so that you basically become a rival to Uber. But you probably do need to find a way to adapt to people's different car ownership needs, okay, which now are more flexible or autonomous.
So it's more like it's like the concept of changing your business. Without actually ever naming what that is.
But it's just business. Like business, you've always had to adapt or you're going to get like
disrupted. So it just means
disrupted.
Work.
It goes back to Kodak, doesn't it? Like, yeah. And now it's just got this horrible, annoying buzzword hung around it. And I have to live with it every day. So I wanted to rant about it.
No, well ranted. Would you guys bin that?
I still don't really know what it means. So yes.
Yeah. Bin it. Good. Good
That's
rant.
That's it. Done.
The last thing I would, this is the final thing, I would bin tech leaks. So when it's a difficult thing to bin because they're leaks.
but we're in the week of, you need a
watertight container for those things. Room 101 is pretty watertight. But we're the day before, as we record the new iPhone launch, and we will talk specifically more about that in the pod coming up hopefully Thursday or Friday. But just the fact that when the first iPhone came out, no one knew what Steve Jobs was going to announce. There might have been like, it's going to be a phone of some sort. They might do a phone. But the fact that we had no idea what it would look like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what is it, 11 years on? We basically know exactly what's going to happen. And it's not just Apple, it's for every kind of tech product. And again, slightly hypocritical because TechAdvisor and Macworld, we get a lot of traffic by publishing rumor stories, looking through the internet, combing out what we think is rubbish and what is probably genuine. But there's three iPhones coming out tomorrow, and we basically know everything about them. And it's a shame that we don't get to journalistically react with like surprise and sort of immediate criticism of certain things, specifically with products. Just, I know I'm being quite like, this is quite specific to my job.
It's a little bit inside baseball, isn't it? But the thing is, like, leaks for me and Tamlin might be a good thing because it might be like an internal memo that shows that like Facebook are doing horrible things.
So this is better, yeah, for B2B. Like if you get a scoop or uncover a story,
yeah,
or
leaks
something,
are great.
Right? Whereas this is a form of leak where everyone gets it. One person might get it first, but it's just kind of this. We'll still credit the person who saw it first, but then everyone covers it and all the news is the same.
I'm quite cynical as well.
All opinion is just kind of flat. We just have to report this phone that someone's taken a picture of.
I was going to say, do you reckon it's such a popular model to create hype that it's possibly orchestrated now or at least allowed to happen?
And that's the thing. Then you get like conspiracies and stuff. I'm pretty certain that Apple, that guy that left the iPhone 4 in a bar, I'm pretty sure he was immediately fired. And like because somebody gave it to Gizmodo.
That was a while ago,
like 2010 or something, yeah. But Apple like raided his flat. But yeah, like the Pixel 3 XL, which is probably out next month, that's leaked really far in advance, and some people on the internet being like, "Oh, maybe they're doing it on purpose to get like." I personally don't believe that, but other companies who need more press might well do that.
It's a travesty that we won't all get to enjoy the big reveal of the Pixel 3 in real time.
Shut your damn mouth! I know this is specific to my nerdy. Taste,
is there an I do share this feeling with you, Henry, but I wonder if there is an element of us both wishing we had more serious jobs. Because if we were journalists in another field, we might, you know, be reporting on.
I know this is specific to like products and stuff, but like just like that. Basically, because I'm very privileged to have this job and I love it. But the one thing that it has spoiled for me is stuff like, you know, getting a new phone or like seeing something for the first time. Like I see it, I've seen so many and reviewed so many that now I'm just like, eh. Whereas like my friend was asking for phone advice the other day and she was like, I'm so excited to get this. I was like, yeah, so did I. I used to be really excited to buy stuff and get stuff.
It's basically spoilers.
Yeah, just spoilers for tech. I hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish we could just like all find out at the same time and react to it with like an actual opinion. Whereas now we're just gonna be like, as we suspected, the iPhone XS will come out. It's got this camera, like we thought, and like.
And going back to the echo chamber as well, the tech press, not us because we do features mostly, but the people who do news, they are, as soon as there's a leak, they are trying to find new ways or hot takes to cover it, aren't they?
Yeah,
and it's like.
And I think just the oversaturation of all this stuff, yeah, and the leaks just mean everyone, probably us, we probably just report the same thing without much thought into what. Is even what we're even doing and why. I think it's kind of
the existential dread that was not alleviated by the Denny's.
Yeah, I'm staring deep into that processed cream.
We've come full circle.
So that's what I've been, a bit specific, but that's our 8 binnable things. Room 101 is bursting at the seams. Elon Musk.
Remember in the program they used to not always let things in, but we've. I
forgot that rule. I thought halfway through, maybe, I could have just not put them all in. But to be honest, I'm looking at this list. I'd probably bin it all. Did buy a book off Amazon the other day. I've used an Apple Watch. I'm on Twitter. I write about tech leaks. I probably played a freemium game. I haven't digitally transformed, though. So maybe I wouldn't have put that one in just to piss you off.
I think you have. I think that's what you're describing just now, that you've changed from the wide-eyed innocent who didn't know about tech leaks. Now you've digitally transformed into...
Oh, Analog Henry, we miss it.
Analog Henry. Good nickname.
Yeah, got to charge me every night. right. Thanks a lot. That was Ep 101. We'll be back to a slightly more normal. It will be an Apple special next time. Hopefully we'll get David Price back in to chat about the iPhones we've already seen online. But thanks for tuning in. That was your Room 101 episode. Thanks, guys. And see you next time.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.